have great confidence that when the dust settles towards the end of the session, we will have a package that works for Alaskans and will be durable over time.
Lawmakers focus on oil taxes the day before the start of the legislative session. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, January 14th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend, and we're broadcasting live from KTOO in Juneau. Also tonight, former members of the Senate majority adjust to their new reality.
So we're just working with less real estate. So I think we're up to the job, but it takes a little doing.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. You have the power to help others when you file online for your PFD. It's easy to share a little of your PFD through Pick, Click, Give. You can make a real difference and support causes that matter most to you, from feeding the hungry, supporting youth in education, or sustaining the arts. Learn more at pickclickgive.org. This message sponsored by ExxonMobil, North Rim Bank, and Doyon Limited.
The 28th legislature gets underway tomorrow afternoon. With Republicans holding a majority in both chambers, significant changes are likely for how lawmakers will work together. Oil tax reform proposals will be a big focus. I sat down in the Speaker's Chamber with majority leaders, Kenai Representative Mike Chenault, the House Speaker, and Wasilla Senator Charlie Huggins, the Senate President, to ask how they see the debate over oil taxes playing out this session. I asked Huggins if there were any deal breakers for him.
I mean, that's the beauty. I don't think there's a deal breaker. It's our task to look at, you know, the things we have in common as far as how we approach this, but more importantly, where we have contrasting points of view, that we work out some middle ground that works and that Alaska wins. And, you know, I have great confidence that when the dust settles towards the end of the session, we will have a package that works for Alaskans and will be durable over time. And there will always be people that will be skeptics of it, but I think there will be some of us will have a little bit of pride in having done something.
And Representative Chenault, how about you? Are there deal breakers?
You know, I don't see any deal breakers right now. I like to be optimistic to think that at least if we have a open relationship with not only the administration but also the Senate, that we have the ability to sit down and talk. Charlie and I probably agree on a lot of things, but not on everything. And so, you know, the idea with a piece of legislation is you take the best ideas from all three branches of government, put them together, and try to meld them into a piece of legislation that moves Alaska forward, puts more oil in the pipeline, makes sure that we get our fair share, and creates jobs for Alaskans, and creates a future economy.
Well, both of you, of course, are well aware that Alaskans have other very pressing issues beyond energy. So what else do you think really needs to be dealt with during this session, Senator Huggins?
Well, I mean, we've hit the crossroads of decline in production prices. So by virtue of that, the budget will be a challenge. And so we will devote more than a minor amount of our time trying to figure out not only this coming year's budget, but over time, if that decline curve continues, and that's the task, to look at how we can abate that decline over time and then hopefully increase production. But, you know, it's a slippery slope, and it's going to take time. You know, we as a society, Alaskans being a cross-section of that, sort of have the light switch mentality. You say, okay, we need it to happen now, and you reach over and you flip a switch and you have lights and everybody's happy ever after. This will take years.
So the budget's a big concern.
Yep.
Budget's big. Representative Chenault, what are you hearing from your Kenai Peninsula constituents about other issues that they're really concerned about?
Well, there's a number of issues, and it's not just the budget. It's not just energy. You have, you know, the social issues, the domestic violence, the suicides, the alcoholism rate, the drug rate, police protection. So healthy communities, safe communities is an issue that I think that's going to be important to Alaskans. And also education. Because without a good education, a lot of these social problems continue to exist and flourish. And, you know, it's my hope that through education that we can take and bring some of those statistics down where we're not number one in a lot of these issues.
Mm-hmm. Going into tomorrow's session, the Republican legislature is in the strongest position that it's been in quite some time. But the state Republican Party is in kind of a turmoil and power struggle over leadership. Is this going to be a big distraction, or how do you see this, Senator Huggins, affecting cohesiveness within the party?
Yeah. Well, I mean, two separate things. I mean, the Speaker and I are both members of the Republican Party. On the other hand, there's nothing different about the Republican Party squabbling amongst itself. So, you know, it's just a continuing saga. I mean, the same things happen with the Democrats. You know, I mean, look at it. People are fighting and kicking down doors to join the Republican Party. Ask Lindsey Holmes. So I think we're probably in a pretty good position.
And Representative Chenault, how do you see this going forward?
And I try to keep it separate as much as I can. What happens in the legislature is legislative issues, and what happens in the party is the party issues. It's kind of like the legislature in all reality. At some point in time, you have to come together. And while Charlie and I may not agree on every issue, we find the common grounds and the common issues that we can agree on, and that's the agenda that gets moved forward.
So maybe on some level it's just democracy at work, and it's kind of messy even within the parties?
There's nothing makes me more uncomfortable when you have multiple people sitting around the table just agreeing. And we've seen that. And, you know, to have people that dissent, have a contrasting point of view and a different idea, is healthy. Now, you know, can it get bloody and not be so happy and healthy? Yeah, but, you know, I haven't seen any blood yet. And, you know, probably some foul talk going on. But when the dust settles, you know, somehow, some way, there will be a Republican Party and there will be a Democratic Party and others. And somehow, some way, we will have primaries and general elections. And guys like Speaker and I will come out on top.
Senate President Charlie Huggins and House Speaker Mike Chenault talking this afternoon in the State Capitol Speaker's Chamber. Even though the legislative session doesn't start until tomorrow, lots of behind-the-scenes work is underway at the state capitol. APRN's Annie Fite wandered the halls today looking for activity and has this story.
In the back of the House chamber, Colt Franklin and Josh Verhagen are huddled over an old-fashioned paper cutter. The House pages are carefully chopping the edges off laminated maps of the House floor, showing which representatives have which seat. Franklin explains.
When representatives are looking to see, like, who has given a certain bill or they're looking to pass a message to a person, they're able to look at the maps and able to know exactly where that person is and who they are they're trying to find out, that kind of thing.
Franklin and Verhagen have been on the job since last Tuesday, doing all the little tasks that will help the session run smoothly. Both are college students who wanted to see the session up close to get insight into the political system. Verhagen.
I just wanted to come down and see what it was like to work in the Capitol and learn a little bit more about our state government and how it works.
Franklin says after a week of prep, he's ready for the actual session to start.
We did a mock session to prepare for it, and I'm just excited to see exactly what's going to happen and what my responsibilities are, what I can do to help out the process of it.
After saying goodbye, I head down the cavernous stairway and run into James Prim. He's nice enough to let me tag along.
I guess I'm just an intern with Wolokowski's office.
And where are we going?
Supplies. I need to find a tape measure, see if they'll lend me one.
Why do you need a tape measure?
We're trying to see if a file cabinet will fit in our office. And I don't think it's going to.
We find the supply closet in the basement.
Is there anybody I can borrow a tape measure from you guys? Thanks. How's it going, man?
Good, how's it going?
Pretty good. All right, cool.
You got it.
Yeah, I got the tape measure. Now back up the stairs again.
We climb 5 flights of stairs to Senator Wolokowski's office. On the long trip up, Prim explains what his job has entailed in the last few days.
There's really nothing else I'm doing except just trying to put all together, get files together, and get my office together, and just move, boxes and papers.
When we arrive at the office, we meet Michelle Seideman, Senator Bill Wolokowski's chief of staff. Last session, Wilikowski was part of the Senate bipartisan majority. This year, with the new Republican majority, he's in the Democratic minority. Seideman explains that means smaller offices.
So we're just working with less real estate.
And how frustrating has that been?
Well, it's just a challenge getting everything and, you know, realizing that we're in a digital age now, so you don't really need hard copies of stuff. So we just have to change our mindset and be more efficient and work with less. So I think we're up to the job, but it takes a little doing.
She measures the file cabinet.
So 18 inches. Let's see. This is going to fit over here. So that is a tight fit.
It doesn't work, but Seideman and Prim still have a few more hours to figure out something that does. At the Capitol, I'm Annie Feit.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Representative Lindsey Holmes switches parties.
I believe there's going to be a mix of opinions, but I'm happy to talk to everybody. I represent everybody in my district, regardless.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
Republicans in the legislature just upped their numbers after an Anchorage Democrat switched parties. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reports from Juneau.
For 6 years, legislator Lindsey Holmes has represented West Anchorage as a Democrat. But as of Saturday afternoon, she's introducing herself differently.
How would you identify yourself now?
Lindsey Holmes, R. Anchorage.
The announcement that Holmes had switched parties came after a two-hour caucus meeting, where members of the House majority hashed out what the change meant and occasionally tuned in to the NFL playoffs. It was unexpected, and Holmes thinks she'll get a wide range of responses from her district.
It's going to come as a great surprise to a number of people. I think other people will not be as surprised. I think some people will have sort of seen this coming. I believe there's going to be a mix of opinions, but I'm happy to talk to everybody. I represent everybody in my district, regardless.
Holmes represents parts of Spinard and Sand Lake, and she won her race as a Democrat with a respectable 55% of the vote. But she received over 70% in 2010 before taking on part of Republican Mia Costello's old district this year. Holmes says she decided to become a Republican because of her positions on business and energy issues. In the past, she's teamed up with Republican Kurt Olson on changes to antitrust and trade law. And while she didn't vote for the governor's oil tax bill last session, she did support the construction of an in-state gas line. House Majority Leader Lance Pruitt says that's part of why the caucus was eager to welcome her.
Her views on economic development over the past few years are seem to be fairly in line with the majority of our caucus.
As part of the majority, Holmes is now in a stronger position to promote her economic policy, especially since switching parties means she gets a new committee assignment.
I am the most recent member of the House Finance Committee now. Very excited about that.
But Holmes' spot on finance comes at the expense of Democrats. That committee has huge control over state spending, and the minority now has to give up one of their three coveted seats. On Monday, they reorganized so that Les Guerra of Anchorage would stay on, and Scott Kawasaki of Fairbanks would serve in an interim capacity. Fellow Fairbanks representative David Guttenberg held that spot last term, but is getting sworn in late to provide his wife medical care. Democrats are expected to take another vote on their finance representation as soon as Guttenberg returns to the legislature. Holmes' decision to change parties also means that Republicans now have a 75% majority in the House and that they can advance their bills faster. Even so, Democratic Minority Leader Beth Curtula doesn't expect Holmes' departure to affect her caucus too much.
It's not so much the numbers. It's the hard work. It's the keeping focused. It's the working across the aisle. And it's also keeping your eye on what's good for Alaskans.
Curtula says she's focusing on what her four new freshmen can do for her caucus instead of dwelling on Holmes' choice to defect. She adds that she's still willing to hear out Holmes' ideas if they're in line with Democrats' goals.
We're going to be working with her as well as everyone else to do what's right by Alaska, but to not give up our strong values.
The Alaska Democratic Party has been less delegate in its response. Chair-elect Mike Wenstrup described the switch as self-serving and disappointing. He says the party would support a recall effort if residents of District 19 initiated one. For a recall to happen, organizers would have to match 10% of the total votes cast in the election. That means they would have to get more than 750 signatures from qualified voters. On top of that, they would have to wait at least 120 days from the start of the legislative session before they could submit the petition. The earliest they could file is May. Holmes is the first legislator to switch parties since 1998, when Senator Jerry Mackey left the Democrats to join a Republican majority. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Ketchikan Superior Court Judge William Carey is considering whether to order DNA testing in a 30-year-old double homicide in Juneau. It could be one of the first tests of a new Alaska law that allows state-funded examination of DNA evidence after a convicted felon has been sent to prison. KTOO's Matt Miller reports.
Newton Lambert is currently serving a 99-year sentence for the April 1982 murder of Ann Benolken of Juneau. He wants pieces of clothing worn by Ann's husband, James Benolken, to undergo DNA testing in the hope that it will point to another suspect in the murders. A swatch of sweatshirt fabric contains blood, and a piece of pant fabric apparently contains traces of semen. The samples are known by their identification of Q33 and Q34. Lambert was acquitted of James's murder, but convicted of Ann's murder. Co-defendant Emmanuel Tullis was acquitted of both murder charges during a trial that followed Lambert's trial. During the first set of court hearings held in July and last week, forensic experts provided different opinions on the chain of custody or record keeping for the evidence.
Let me tell you this, it's not like CSI on TV. They never show the paperwork.
Abirami Chidambaram, former DNA section technical manager at the Alaska State Crime Laboratory, was not sure that the chain of custody was adequate to show that the fabric had not been altered or contaminated while in storage in California. A private lab manager hired as a consultant by Lambert's attorney said the procedures met the standards of the day. Two people were believed to be responsible for killing the Benolkens, but Sitka-based public defender Jude Pate says Lambert was not one of them.
Two people has always been the theory of the prosecution. It was a theory at trial that there were two people that murdered the Benolkens, and that testing of Q33 and Q34 taken from Mr. Benolken would show the presence of DNA from two people other than the Benolkens and other than Mr. Lambert, and other than Mr. Tullis.
Pate argues that under the new statute, he does not have to prove Lambert's innocence to apply for a DNA test, only present a reasonable probability that he did not commit the offense. Another post-conviction claim is pending, stemming from discredited FBI agent Michael Malone's false testimony at trial about a hair sample that he linked to Lambert. Assistant District Attorney Amy Williams says Pate's theory of defense would not necessarily establish innocence under the statute's requirements for DNA testing.
There could have been three killers, for all we know. At this point, we all are hypothesizing about what happened to James Benolken, and that's really the only person for whom this evidence would have any kind of effect. And that's because it wouldn't say anything about who killed Ann Benolken, which is the murder for which Newton Lambert was convicted.
The new law passed by the legislature 3 years ago clarifies what was essentially new legal ground for the Alaska justice system back in 1993. William Osborne, convicted of raping an Anchorage area prostitute, fought to have evidence tested that could exonerate him. The Alaska Supreme Court ruled that the evidence had to be linked to the crime and definitively prove his guilt or innocence. The U.S. Supreme Court later determined that Osborne had no constitutional guarantee to DNA testing. Ketchikan Superior Court Judge William Carey took the arguments in the Lambert petition under advisement, meaning that he will likely take as long as he needs to consider the arguments and craft an opinion. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. Older Persons Action Group, promoting well-being for Alaska seniors and their families, including publication of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper. Membership information at 1-800-478-1059. And by the 2013 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com.
Yeah. Divers and remotely operated underwater vehicles have completed a review of the hull of a Shell drill rig that ran aground 2 weeks ago on a remote Alaska island. A spokeswoman for the Joint Information Center on the Kulik grounding says information gathered by divers and the ROVs is being analyzed. The Kulik is a circular rig 266 feet in diameter with a 160-foot derrick. The Kulik drilled last year in the Beaufort Sea. It was being towed to Seattle on December 27th when it lost its tow line. Reattached lines also broke, and the vessel ran aground on New Year's Eve. The drill vessel was refloated January 6th and towed to Kaluta Bay, a sheltered bay on Kodiak Island. Alan Moore is the 2013 Copper Basin 300 champion. The Two Rivers musher crossed the finish line around 11:22 this morning. As KCHU's Tony Gorman reports, Moore's victory is an unprecedented fourth in the race's history.
Arkansas native Alan Moore knows a little bit about warm to hot temperatures. As a matter of fact, he was so sick of the southern heat that he moved to Alaska over 20 years ago.
I moved to Fairbanks. Get away from the heat, and I don't get hot anymore.
The last two out of three Copper Basin 300 races have been warm, at least by race standards. In 2011, Moore said he got lost in that race and finished 16th. But this time around,
this all went well, and just like any football team or basketball team, everything has to, you have to have a little luck, but everything has to work well also, and you got to have finished with a lot of healthy dogs, which I did, and then be lucky as far as, like the snow falling up there in the mountains. I didn't have to go break trail, just a little things like that.
Moore's strategy is the same one that led him to victories in three previous CB300 races. The Two Rivers resident said he rested early in order to get through the first three checkpoints faster. He said the strategy worked out perfectly because there was more snow in the mountains.
I rested longer at Chisichina. So other people were going out breaking trail. So when it was time for me to go, I didn't have to break trail.
Moore was in and out of the Tosana Lake Resort checkpoint around 7:57 this morning. He crossed the finish line around 11:22. He beat out Whitehorse's Jerry Willemeitzer, who finished runner-up around 11:47. Defending champion Jake Berkowitz of Big Lake came in 6 minutes behind Willemeitzer. Moore said the CB300 is special to him because it prepares him for longer races more than any other event he's ever competed.
You get to see almost each and every condition in this race. Not this year, but we did get to see warmth, which you see a lot of warmth on Iditarod, and we don't get to train for it being from the interior.
Moore's fourth Copper Basin 300 win is the most in race history. That's more than four-time Iditarod champions Lance Mackey, Susan Butcher, Martin Bucer, and Jeff King. Each of them has two wins. Moore and his black team from SP Kennel plan to compete in the Yukon Quest and the Iditarod later this season. Reporting from Valdez, I'm Tony Gorman.
A little rain did nothing to dampen the spirits of cross-country skiers enjoying the Matanuska-Susitna Borough's second Winter Trails Day this season at the Government Peak Recreation Area near Palmer. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer has more.
Despite unseasonably warm weather and a light drizzle, enthusiastic skiers turned out on Saturday to test the new Government Peak Recreation Area ski trails. The Matanuska-Susitna Borough Parks and Outdoor Recreation Division, the Matsu Trails Council, and Alaska Trails hosted the event, complete with free ski equipment, free instruction, and free hot chocolate. Sheila Bailey and Christopher Bailey were there testing the trail conditions.
It's great. This is the first time we've been on these trails. They're really fun. It's a little wet today, but can't help that. Good for beginners.
How do you rate these trails?
They're pretty good. I haven't been skiing all that much. We just started last year, but they're better than some I've been on. So
we just started skiing last year, actually, and it's a great family activity. Good exercise. It's not that hard.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Matsu Ski Club board member Tom Smeda says there are about 4 miles of trails at Government Peak with beginner to intermediate difficulty levels.
Local community council, borough, other groups have worked together to
to make these a reality. And they're great. They're just excellent, awesome trails. They did a beautiful job of laying them out. Gets good snow, doesn't get the wind. Just great. And the terrain is more agreeable to your average, say, intermediate beginner skier. It's not real intimidating like some trails can be.
He says there is a 2-kilometer dog-friendly trail included in the area, too. There was plenty of snow at Government Peak on Saturday, and people, many with young children in tow, were taking advantage of the festival atmosphere of the day. Ed Strabel, also a ski club board member, says the area is growing in popularity.
Things are looking up as far as cross-country skiing here in the valley. The Junior Nordic program, we last count was 76 kids in that, and no lights. Kids come on out there with their little headlamps, and it looks like a firefly convention. And we've got a lot of skiers coming on out from the valley that are taking advantage of it.
Isabel Giroux and Lori Harris say they enjoy the area's quiet beauty and its convenient location close to Palmer.
Love it. I think it's wonderful. I think it was much needed, and we're happy that it's here.
Yes, it has been raining today, so we're really happy that it's nice now. It's awfully warm, though, so.
So are you avid skiers, both of you? You look like you're ready for action.
Well, avid, I don't know. We're trying to, yeah.
We enjoy getting out.
We do, yes. So we try to get out as much as we can. So.
Yeah, and we've been up here a few times, and we really like it here.
Yeah,
so,
it's really nice.
It's okay.
Fun.
So you give it the thumbs up then.
Absolutely.
Government Peak is not far off Palmer Fishhook Road. Saturday marked the second Winter Trails Day in the area. An earlier event in late December drew a crowd as well, and plans are to eventually expand the trail system there. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly from Juneau. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer in Palmer, Matt Miller in Juneau, and Tony Gorman in Valdez. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineers were Dave Waldron in Anchorage and Andy Klein in Juneau. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2013 PFD, or paper applications are located in your community. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska. Parents, be a hero to your kids. Make time to be physically active as a family. Encourage your children to participate in the Alaska Healthy Futures Challenge at their school. All kids need to do is be active 3 times a week and keep a log of their physical activities. They'll feel great and get cool prizes, too. Go to playeveryday.alaska.gov to find out if your child's elementary school is participating in the Healthy Futures Challenge. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.